John Murphy, Donald Jones, and our special guest in studio with us. We reconnect with Bills insider Chris Brown from BuffaloBills.com. Brownie, haven't seen you in a while. How are you, buddy?
How was your vacation?
Yeah, it was good. A little Texas. Yeah. I got details I want to tell. I'll share with you later.
Tex-Mex, barbecue. I need to all know all
above.
Of that stuff.
Yeah. All of the above, yeah. Some genuine Mexican food, which is unlike Tex-Mex, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
Good trip. A lot of eating and a lot of football talk at the Super Bowl. We were talking with Donald and some of our callers about the Super Bowl, and I'm interested in your thoughts, Chris. Was that, in fact, the greatest Super Bowl of all time 8 days ago?
Not for me, it wasn't.
Really?
I didn't like it.
Because of the Patriots?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
All right, so if you take out the emotional side of it.
I was disappointed in what the Falcons failed to do in that game. I really was. I mean, yes, you know, the Patriots certainly deserve credit for erasing a 25-point deficit in the second half. I'm not going to take that away from them, especially getting two-point conversions in the process. I mean, that really is execution at its finest. Yeah. I think, did I read somewhere they only had 1 2-point conversion all season long up until that game? Oh. And then they got 2 in the Super Bowl to win the thing. So, you know, you tip your hat to a team that probably executes more consistently than any other in football, probably over the better part of the last 15 years. They just, when the chips are down, they come through. You know, it's really a remarkable thing that Bill Belichick has built there, and you have to respect it, even if you don't like it. But I think Atlanta certainly helped them from lack of execution on their own part, some questionable play call decisions, and just overall what I felt was a collapse. I mean, you don't blow a lead like that, even against a team as accomplished as the Patriots, without having at least a handful of major failures.
What were those failures in your mind?
Well, I mean, I think once they had the lead, I think their thinking should have changed to a certain degree. You had to work more clock. I mean, not only were they calling pass plays in short yardage situations, but they weren't even running the play clock down. And you know what you're dealing with on the other side of the ball there. You want Tom Brady to have as few possessions as possible. So the fact that they weren't running the play clock down to at least 5 seconds, down in and down out, once you had a lead of that size, just defies all logic for me. Slow the game down, shorten it, and, you know, hopefully you make enough plays to maintain possession for longer stretches of time, even if you're not coming up with points on second half drives. But, you know, throwing on second and one, throwing again on third and one, missing a block on a blitz pickup, you know, that's what led to the fumble, and, you know, the snowball started going downhill after that.
Now, when you look at Matt Ryan, did that game hurt his legacy thus far in his career at all? I mean, he was having a good game.
Yeah.
And then in the second half, virtually nothing. And then, you know, he got sacked, which took them out of the field goal range and all of that stuff. But does that hurt him at all? It was a great season, but overall, he's been a guy that's known to, let's just say, for lack of a better term, choke in a big stage.
Yeah, I don't think I can call that a choke job on Matt Ryan's part at all. I mean, that guy was still making plays late in the game. Granted, he got some help from Julio Jones. But, you know, I think he was made to be more of a target in this game in the second half, because you knew the Patriots were going to come after him based on the score on the board and the time left in the game. So why are you only running it 5 times in the second half? 5 run plays in the second half, up 25. That's insane to me.
Yep, I agree with that. Donald and I talked about that. I can't remember if it was on the air or off. To me, that's the point to be made. And people say, big deal, and this everything doesn't deal with the Bills. But that's why you like to be a team that is effective at running the ball. You don't have to be #1 rushing attack. The Bills have been. But you have to be a good running attack. Donald would argue, and effectively, that the Falcons were a pretty good running attack. But I also think you have to have the mindset that we will run the football, even when we're trailing. I don't think the Falcons had that mindset all year long, even though they got pretty good production out of their 2 running backs. But I don't think they had the mindset like, hey, not only can we throw the ball, which they could, but we can also run the ball and will run the ball.
Well, one of the criticisms of the Falcons over the last several years is that they're a soft football team. Mm-hmm. And that's why Dan Quinn was hired, to try to change that narrative and instill more toughness, be it mental or physical, in this football team. And I think when Alex Mack went out of the football game, it was almost like they were scared to run the football anymore. Alex Mack's a great player, but you can't lose one guy and completely scrap what you are as a football team. And that was a team that was gashing the Patriots in the run game in the first half. So why you go away from that is inexplicable to me. I don't get it.
So if that's not the greatest Super Bowl of all time, do you have one in mind that would be?
I still think Super Bowl 25 was a fantastic game.
Yeah.
You know, Parcells really probably coached his best football game of his career in that game, in my opinion.
As did Belichick, probably.
And Belichick, gets an assist in that, no question about it. I thought that was one of the best coached Super Bowls that I've seen, at least on the winning side of that ledger, knowing it was a one-point game and as tight as it was. You know, I'm sure there have been others. I don't commit, you know, the Super Bowls to memory in terms of, you know, the quality of the game as much. I was scarred by a lot of those in the mid to late 80s
that were
very, very lopsided. You know, Washington beating Denver 42-7, Bears beating the Patriots 46-10. It really left a pockmark on what the Super Bowl was for me as a kid growing up and, you know, watching those games as a teenager. So when I did the Super Bowl 25 for me was one of those first really tight, you know, battles. And I think that's why it sticks in my head so vividly as being probably one of the better Super Bowls of all time.
Now, Super Bowl 25, I didn't get to see that like I watch games now. But, Murph, you were saying that the Giants kept the ball a lot.
Yeah.
Like they ran the ball a lot.
Yeah, about 40 minutes.
And if you remember the Patriots in this one, I mean, there was a point where the Falcons weren't on the field for like an hour of real time.
Yeah.
You know, so it was like that's what the Falcons needed to do to the Patriots in the second half. Like, just run the clock, run the ball, run the clock. Keep Tom Brady off the field.
Giants in 25, though, they were determined to do that regardless of whether they didn't have a lead for much of that. And they just said, we're going to play keep away.
Yeah.
And you're right, the Falcons should have done that, especially with a 28-3 lead. No question about that. Chris Brown, Bills Insider from BuffaloBills.com, joins us in studio. Your phone calls, you're welcome to join us at 803-0550 or from outside Buffalo, toll-free 1-888-552-550. We can talk about the Super Bowl. We can talk about really the topic of our Twitter poll. First Sunday without football yesterday. First time in, I think, 22 weeks without football. That's our Twitter poll. It is up right now. It's been up for a couple of hours. First Sunday without football, what did it mean to you? 37% say you didn't even notice. 31% say you missed it a lot, no football on Sunday. 26% say good, needed a break from NFL football. 6% say you were able to get your to-do list completed. What do you think? Give us a call, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Chris, can I guess what the first Sunday without football meant to you? Did you go skiing yesterday?
Nope. Did a lot of college hoops.
Yeah, there
college
you go.
Hoops.
There you
yeah,
go.
That's where I'm going. Hey,
nobody says
got,
NBA.
I got my tickets
hoops.
To March Madness.
Me too.
So
yeah,
I'm ready. I'm kind of diving in head first. And
so you saw Michigan roll Indiana?
Digging deep. I didn't watch that game. I did watch the Northwestern game. That was a nice game. They upset Wisconsin. Looks like they're going to get to the tournament for the first time in their history.
Amazing.
Which blew me away when I saw that. Yeah. I could not believe that they have never been to the NCAA tournament before. One of the only major
64-team tournament.
Yeah,
you almost
it was. Yeah. That was mind-blowing for me. So I was glad that I watched that game. And, you know, I'm a St. John's fan, you know, and it's been a rough go. But I think Chris Mullin's doing some nice things down there in terms of slowly building that program back up. They had a nice win over Seton Hall the other day. And I know that doesn't sound like a big victory. But if you've known where St. John's has been the last 10 years, that's a pretty good win for them. And they've got some other quality wins, but they're still under 500. They're not going to the tournament. But just I'm diving headfirst into that stuff. So – you know, when we got to make certain picks come March, I'm informed. I'm ready to go.
I hear you. Now, when you look at the poll and you have so many people saying right now in the lead, I didn't notice. Do you think that's because here in Buffalo, the team hasn't won in 17 years?
And they've been out. People,
right. So it's like the same thing. Every
They've already been unplugged, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah. I think there's some validity to that.
And yet, what did I read when I was gone? Buffalo was among the national leaders
in
television
ratings.
Number two
in TV ratings.
What was number one? Super Bowl ratings. Was it one of the Atlanta or Boston?
No, it wasn't. It was, I'm not going to remember now.
Okay, but Buffalo, people watch the Super Bowl here, and people pay attention to the playoffs here. The ratings are consistently strong.
It's pretty cold.
Yeah, Providence, I remember Providence.
Always the weather with this.
Providence and Boston were 8-9, and they weren't even in the top five.
Really?
And maybe it's because they are broken up as television markets.
Yeah.
I don't know what the rhyme or reason was for that. Maybe they're spoiled and have been there too often. I don't know.
Well, you can give us a call on that at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550 or via Twitter. What did you do with your first Sunday without football? The football talk continues, as you know, here, Chris, and we are deeply embedded in what's going on around here. We had somebody tweet earlier like they wanted to hear from Sean McDermott. I feel the same way. The guy has been underground for 5 weeks now, right, since he was hired, which is okay.
Yeah.
But we're starving for info out here, right? Aren't we?
Yeah.
And the fans feel that too, I think.
Yeah, and I get it. I mean, people want to know more about what the direction is going to be under Sean McDermott, but I think that's part of what he's putting together and formulating right now with his staff of assistants, which is finally complete. It was completed just last week. And so I think they're really laying the groundwork for a number of things that coaching staffs typically go through this time of year, especially new staffs, which is laying out the calendar, you know, for OTAs, mini camp, training camp, and the period of time in which they want to get certain things complete with the players, you know, through the classroom work that takes place off the field in the first stage of OTAs. Then they get on the field and all of that. And I think they also want to, I mean, there's some blending that has to happen here with these staff members. There's a handful of guys that have worked together before, but the vast majority have not. And I think you've got to really have those big-time hash-out sessions, like what is our identity going to be on this side of the ball, delegating responsibilities through the course of a game plan week, who's going to be doing what once we get to the regular season, and then player personnel-wise. I mean, they're completing all those player evaluations on tape, putting together their reports position by position, and then presenting those to the coordinators and the head coach. And, you know, that all takes time. I mean, you're grinding tape right now to get a better handle on players they have not worked with up until now, with the only exception being Danny Crossman.
Is when you look at the coaching staff that Coach McDermott has assembled, and it's complete now, as you said, as of last week, is there one overriding theme? And, in fact, would it be experience, NFL experience, maybe kind of top to bottom on this coaching staff?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. I know our media relations staff went through it, and this is the most experienced Bills coaching staff, I think, since the 70s, just in terms of man-to-man, the number of years spent in this league coaching. And a lot of these guys come from pretty successful coaching backgrounds at that. It's not like they've just kind of drifted from team to team. These guys have been parts of successful programs, you know, a handful of them under Andy Reid. There's another guy, other guys who have come from successful college programs and moved on to the NFL and had success there. So I just think there's a lot of guys here, you know, and secondarily probably the next thing I would say after experience is the ability to teach players. If there's one thing that's been sorely lacking in the coaching staffs over the years here with all of the head coaching turnover that we've seen since 2000, it's the ability of the staff to maximize the talent on the roster and improving the overall collective product on the field. And I think for the first time in a long time, the vast majority of these coaches on staff are known as teachers first, and I think that's going to be important. It's great to come from an experienced background. It's great to have guys on this staff who have played in the league. It gives them instant credibility when they walk in the door. But I think even more important than that is a track record of making players better, because if you want a player to follow your instructions to the letter, if they see previous evidence from other players in the league who have gotten better as players after they got here, they're going to follow you like the Pied Piper, because they want to become better players, because they know if they're better on the field, that means more money in their pocket come contract time.
I think that's a great thing to have coaches that are known as teachers, because overall in this league, man, coaches don't teach like they used to. I mean, or I don't know if they ever did, but I know when I was playing, they didn't teach, and we talked about this last week, you have so many coaches that move around position to position, and, you know, and they're really just, you know, they might have played in college or in the league, they might have played DB, but now they're coaching line, or they're coaching something else besides the position that they played or the position that they know. And it's just because they don't really teach, they just teach the plays, you know. So to bring in a bunch of coaches that actually are known for teaching guys and making them better, I think that's also a plus on Coach McDermott's, you know, I guess just the coaches that he's brought in, aside from just the experience.
One of the last pieces of the puzzle, Chris Gilbert came in last week to coach defensive backs. He's one of those experienced guys. Obviously, his son Jarris played here. But this is a guy who's been around the league a lot and has a record of success as a defensive backfield coach.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, most recently in Tampa Bay, I think he was out of the league last year. But you want to talk about a guy who comes in the door with instant credibility.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy played. I mean, he's in the Chargers Hall of Fame.
Great player.
Four-time All-Pro.
Yeah.
Two-time Pro Bowl player as a cornerback. So, you know, I think this is a guy that can teach some of those techniques. And, you know, granted, he was a guy that played in an era where you could be a little more handsy as a cornerback than you can now. But I think still in all, you know, this is a guy that can give cornerbacks and safeties, for that matter, the tools that they're going to need to improve as players. And I think it's probably a pretty safe assumption, you know, that this team is going to have a couple of rookies in their secondary, you know, come OTAs, come mini camp, that he's going to have to school up, knowing how deep the draft is at cornerback and safety and knowing the positional need that exists at those two spots. You know, having a veteran, experienced coach who has played in the league and played for a long time, to have him on your staff to be schooling young, impressionable players, I think is critical.
A lot of speculation out there, and I read something, people just connecting dots, that since Gilbert is here, maybe Jarris Bird returns. I don't know. It's dot connecting.
Still on the contract?
He's got to get released first, and the overwhelming opinion is that he will be a salary cap casualty of the Saints. It hasn't happened yet, but, you know, there's a lot of speculation going on down there that that will, in fact, happen. You know, does he come back here with his dad here? Does that enhance the attractiveness of coming back to Buffalo? You know, I suppose it's a possibility, but what kind of money is he asking for?
Right, right.
This is also a guy who has not played 16 games in a long time, and he had injury problems when he was here as a very young player. So I don't know what level of attractiveness he has to the Bills front office, knowing that they didn't value him enough to keep him in the first place, and he had gone to a couple of Pro Bowls before he left here. But the safety position by nature is one that GM Doug Whaley has made a point of not overvaluing.
Right.
So I think it would largely depend on what kind of money we're talking about before Jarris Bird is even a consideration.
Did I see you shake your head no a minute ago about Jarris?
You know, I would just because I remember you guys, and obviously I wasn't here when he was going through the contract situation, but from what I recall, it wasn't like a pretty situation between him and
it got acrimonious, yeah.
Right. So I wouldn't see him deciding, okay, I'm going to go back and talk to those guys again and hash everything out. Or them even saying, yeah, we want to try to work with him after what they went through with him before.
Stranger things have happened, but I agree with you. I wouldn't see that happening. We're talking with Chris Brown. We're going through some of the coaching hires by head coach Sean McDermott or any kind of Bills talk. We've got phone lines open, 803-0550. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. You can phone in any comments or questions about the Bills as we talk with Bills insider Chris Brown. Mike Waffle gets a lot of attention. I think he is one of those hard knock stars that has a lot of people interested in watching him work, the new defensive line coach for the Bills.
I think it's very easy for people that watch that program or for a fan in general to get a pretty good handle on the personality of Mike Waffle right away. I mean, it's all right out there on his sleeve, in your face, pretty vocal guy. But, you know, you hear or read the commentary from some of his former players, and it's very evident to me that there's a healthy respect there. You know, he's going to push people, but he's only doing that to make his players better, and I think his players very quickly recognize that's what he's so hard on them for. If he's yelling at them, it's because he believes they can do better, not because he thinks they're incapable, not because he's trying to be difficult with them. That's his coaching style. He wants to drive guys to make them their best. And I think a lot of those guys that he coached with the Rams on the defensive line the last several years came to understand that pretty quickly. And, you know, he's inheriting a pretty talented group here. And if he can we go back to maximizing the potential of the players that he has at his disposal. If he can maximize that talent, this team in this scheme can very quickly get back to being one of the top teams in sacks in the National Football League.
Chris Brown joins us. We're going through some of the coaching hires for head coach Sean McDermott. We've got a post up on, I think it went up today, earlier today, about David Culley, the new quarterbacks coach. Tell me, and Brian Mitchell, actually.
Right.
You guys had him on the show last Friday. He had some good things to say about David Culley. What did he say, Tom?
He just talked about, you know, obviously he's been coaching wide receivers, but he played quarterback, you know, and he just talked about the type of person that he is and the worker that he is and how he is a guy who teaches, you know, and he might yell at you, he might get after you, but it's all in just trying to teach you so that you understand what it is that you're supposed to do. He talked about how hard he works. But I think overall the biggest thing was him teaching and how much of a teacher he is.
And I think he aspires. I think even at age 60, he still aspires to try to be a head coach in this league. And I think that's one of the main reasons that Andy Reid did let him go off of his staff in Kansas City, because he was a receivers coach there and has been for a long time in the league. But this is a guy that played quarterback in college himself and wanted to get back to that position group and coach quarterbacks. He believes it's a faster springboard for him to head coaching opportunity. And why not coach the position you played? You know, going back to what Donald said, guys get bounced around to different jobs and roles, positions they didn't play when they were players. I think it's important that Culley gets back to the quarterback position, especially knowing the state of flux that that position is in for the Bills right now. To have a guy with this amount of experience who played the position himself, I just think it could potentially be pretty invaluable, whether it's going to be an inexperienced person coming through the door playing that position, or even if it's Tyrod playing in a new system. This is a guy that can be invaluable no matter who they line up under center.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, in studio with us. Going to spend a few more minutes with us. Hey, Chris, before we leave the coaching staff discussion, move on to other things, how much mesh do you think is going on, maybe last week, this week, with this whole new coaching staff and the player personnel department, Doug Whaley, Jim Monas, and that group? I mean, how much input are they getting? Because we're 2 weeks away from the combine. They're going to have a plan by then, at the very least.
Right, yeah. I think basically what's going to probably happen is the personnel department's going to set the initial draft board, and then I think after that's done on their side of the ledger and after the coaching staff is done with their player evaluations with players currently on the roster and set to hit free agency, that's when the two sides get together and say, what's our game plan here and what do you value in a player? What do you feel our biggest positional needs are? That's when that crosstalk goes on. So when they do, and granted, they do have an extra week to do so because the combine was pushed back a week.
Right.
It's not going to start until the last day in February, first full week in March. So there is an extra week to work with there. And so I think they're going to take every available opportunity to kind of lay things out, find out what the coaching staff feels they need, how that can best be met, be it free agency or the draft, and then put a game plan together so when they do get to Indianapolis, whether they have to talk to agents of players who are coming up on contract or whether they have to dig in deep and pick specific people for interviews in the draft pool so they have a better handle on guys they could potentially be targeting, that's when that all gets laid out. I would say probably the week before is when they're going to finalize that stuff.
Now, you see teams around the league now making moves. The Giants released Victor Cruz. They also released Jennings, their running back,
right.
That just came across.
Right, older guy, yeah.
Right. Do you think that's something that you're going to start to see in the next week or two with the Bills, knowing that you're going into combine and you need to have this plan into place?
Well, whether it's next week, you know, or even, well, next week is really it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're kind of there. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it would have to take place between now and the end of next week if you feel you need to make a cut or two here or there for someone that might be overpriced on your roster in terms of the value you feel they deliver to your football team. It's unfortunate, but this is the season where veterans get clipped. And we saw some of that last week. We're going to see more of it this week and probably even more next week. How long the Bills wait to do that, it's hard to say. It could be any time between now and the time they get to Indianapolis.
Got a lot more personnel issues to talk with Chris Brown, Bills Insider at BuffaloBills.com. We're going to do it in just a moment. If you're on the hold right now, stay there. We'll get to your call in a moment. Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. In studio with us, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, joined in studio by Bills Insider Chris Brown from Buffalo Bills. .com. We've talked a lot about the coaching hires. We also put the question out there for fans. Did you miss football yesterday? Got a response here. Mark calling from New Jersey. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
I didn't really miss it because, you know, Saturdays, Sundays, the Premier League is on. It's on very early. You know, you can get up and you watch it uninterrupted by any lengthy challenges or commercials. And you could just go on about your day because the games are over a little after, like, around 12:30. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so if you
Mark, you've walked right into Chris Brown's wheelhouse.
Sure,
I was thinking about you, Chris. I was at the car wash yesterday, early yesterday morning, 8:30 or so in the morning. And they had soccer on the big screen, and I thought the only guy I know who might be up watching this right now is Chris Brown.
Yeah, it was. I watch games every Saturday. Yeah, Tottenham's my team. I was pretty disappointed last week.
What happened?
They lost 2-0.
Oh,
but
2-0.
Here's the thing that I enjoy most. I mean, not having been a player myself, but the thing I enjoy is that the actual broadcast, the English broadcast, is so different from anything you experience in the U.S. Just the commentary, the running commentary, the vocabulary, the voice inflection's different. You know, word usage is different. It's so unique to me from what everything, you know, you've grown up with in the States, whether it's football, basketball, hockey, baseball. It's just a different narrative altogether. And much like baseball, you really do have to fill because there's a lot of passing going on before stuff around the net happens.
Yeah.
Now,
right.
And I know that's a disconnect that'll never be made by a lot of people in this country that never played the game. But I just find it very entertaining, just the style with which a lot of those guys broadcast the game. So, you know, being in this field, I almost get as much enjoyment out of the broadcast as I do out of the actual play on the field.
All right.
There's your 2 minutes. That we're done, right?
We have not converted.
We filled the quota on them.
I don't
try anymore, Murph. I've given
right
up on you.
Yeah,
please give up on me too.
Yeah, that's fine.
I do think of you when it's channel surfing and I see soccer. I say, oh, Chris might be watching this. Boom.
But, I clicked it that fast.
Go right to the next college hoop game. Chris, the last time I talked to you, the last time we got a chance to talk to you was 3 weeks ago now, right? Senior Bowl in Mobile. How'd you like Mobile? Did you have any fun down there? It's a great place.
The weather was good that week, I have to say, because the last time I was down there was in the 50s and it was chilly when we were expecting better. But we actually had one day that was 73 and – I'm sure you saw behind me when we were doing those live reports. I mean, it was a cloudless sky. Sunshine was out. It was about 73 degrees. It was nice. It was a good respite to get, you know, from the weather up here. Not that we've had a bad winter, but, the weather was probably the best part of the whole thing.
One of the things I've always liked about the Senior Bowl was the opportunity to turn the page from one season to the next. You felt that and got a look at some of the prospects, not the blue chippers or the premium prospects, but some of those guys had to be standouts, right?
Yeah, and, you know, the thing that I liked was, different from previous years, they would always run one team practice at another stadium out in Fairhope, which is like 15, 20 minutes away from the actual Senior Bowl. This year they had, and I can't remember if they did that last year too, but both teams were practicing back-to-back in the same stadium. So, you know, we'd get about a half-hour respite between practices. You know, you can kind of type up some notes from the first practice, and then bang, the second practice is right there, and you don't have to worry about hopping in a car and running somewhere. So I really appreciated that. And then I think the other thing too is just being down – on the field. A lot of people like to watch up in the stands. I like to be right down by the fence just so I can kind of hear the coaching and the interaction between players also. I like to kind of hear the communication that's going on down there. What's this kid like on the field when he's practicing? Is he revving up his teammates? You know, is he talking to the quarterback if he's a receiver about the play that just happened and see what happens later in practice? Who's first in line? You know, for the drills and everything. It's those kinds of things that I like to kind of pull out of the sessions.
I know you went down there with an eye on many of the receivers and came away impressed with a guy who I had not heard of from East Carolina, wide receiver Zay Jones. What did you like about him?
I just like pretty much everything about his game. He went back for his senior year after extraordinary production in that East Carolina offense, went back for his senior year anyway and just blew it up. And the thing that was most attractive after doing some research on him coming into the week was the fact that he had primarily been a slot receiver his first 3 years at ECU, and his senior year, they started moving him all around. He was playing the X, the Z, in the slot also in terms of production there. He was just an unstoppable player for them, and they went to him each and every week. He saw a lot of double teams and still managed to make plays for that offense, and I just like how smooth he is. He's not one of those, you know, stutter step staccato type route runners. He just gets in and out of breaks so effortlessly, really loose in the hips, and he's not rounding things off. He's making his cuts, but he's just he's so subtle with the way he changes direction. I think he kind of leaves defensive backs kind of at a loss for like, holy cow, I didn't think he'd be doing that there. And all of a sudden he's got separation and he's making a play. He's long and angular, even though he's only about 6'1", but he's kind of long-legged. But he gets separation and he makes plays, and he's got a nice catch radius too. Long arms for a guy that's 6'1", and I just felt he was making plays every single day. I know Cooper Kupp got a lot of publicity, especially coming out of an FCS school, but with what Zay Jones did from what I saw from the start of the week to the end in the game, I mean, he should have had 2 touchdowns. He had one taken away on a bad call by the officials. He caught that ball in the back of the end zone, got 1 foot down, and they incorrectly ruled it incomplete. He would have had 2 touchdowns in the game. I just thought he put together a fantastic week and really helped himself. He was seen as kind of a day two pick, more late round three. I think he's moved himself up into the conversation for round two.
Huh. Now, a guy that, like you said, everybody was talking about, Cooper Kupp. What'd you think about him?
I think he's got a place in the NFL. I just don't think the ceiling is as high on him as a guy like Zay Jones or some other top receivers in the draft. And the reason why is I think he's maxed out physically at 6'1", barely 190 pounds. He's a slight-framed guy, and he's done everything in his power to make himself as big as he can possibly be. You know, he was a late bloomer as a kid, didn't really fill out until he's about 20 years old. You know, here we are 21, 22 years of age, and he's 6'1", 190, and that's probably all you're going to get out of this kid. So to me, I think he's strictly a slot guy. I don't think he's going to be able to handle the physical cornerbacks outside. This is a guy whose game is built on precision to get separation. I mean, he can run every route on the tree and do it really, really well, but I think he knows he needs to be precise if he's going to make plays at the NFL level. And you know, because of that limitation, I think he's probably late day two, maybe early round four on day three. It's a guy that I think in time will have a role, but he's not, to me, he's not going to be a top two receiver in this league for any team.
You're keeping an eye on offensive linemen, and a lot of people liked Antonio Garcia from Troy University at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, I was impressed with him. I mean, there were some other good tackles there too. The guard, Forrest Lamp, got his week cut short by a high ankle sprain, but I really liked what I saw from Garcia. The reason why was he's really long, but, I mean, this guy, when he stands up, I mean, he's almost got a six-pack. I mean, you don't see that for an offensive tackle in this league, but he's very long and angular. He doesn't look like an offensive tackle, but his athleticism is outstanding. Long arms, and he's got a strong back. I mean, he'd had a couple of 290-pound guys coming off the edge at him, and he just stood him up, heavy hands, and really rode them out of the play. I mean, he was taking on bull rushes pretty effectively from some pretty accomplished guys. I just liked what I saw from him. He looked the part. The talent he faced was not bigger than him. He didn't put up with a lot of guff from other guys, and I just thought he had a very consistent week from start to finish. So I think for a team that's going to employ a zone blocking scheme, you can get this guy involved on the move. I think he's that athletic, even at the tackle position at 6'7". You know, and you know the Bills are going to be probably employing a zone blocking scheme with Rick Dennison as the offensive coordinator. Is he a fit here? I suppose he could be. He's probably a day two guy just from the fact that, you know, he wasn't playing the tip-top level of competition in college at Troy.
Now, you look at the offensive line position, and especially the right tackle position, you would think Sean McDermott looked at that position and Jordan Mills, you don't know what he thinks about that, but, you know, Jordan Mills had some bad games against the top talent. We talk about the defensive side of the ball, safety. You know, you might need a linebacker. You might need wide. Well, obviously, we need safety, linebackers. You need wide receiver.
Wide receiver.
But is offensive line a position where they could go in the first round, knowing that Cyrus Quandjo got hurt and knowing that, you know, Jordan Mills is a free agent?
And we still don't know. I still don't think Shontrell Henderson's medical situation is completely resolved either. So,
right.
And he's entering the last year of his contract. So is Quandjo.
And he still has the suspension
on their rookie deals, right? So, you know, we have a situation where it's very up in the air. There's some interesting guys in the free agent market that I think will be available. I think the question becomes, how much do you want to invest there? You just handed Cordy Glenn a gigantic long-term contract. Do you want to do the same on the other side? You know, how good, how important is it to you to be super strong on both edges of your offensive line? That could hinge on what you're doing at quarterback. You know, if Tyrod's still in the fold, you got a mobile guy who can get out of trouble and still make plays on the run. Does that, you know, mitigate the idea of investing big money in a right tackle? Mitchell Schwartz was probably the highest paid right tackle in free agency last year, got a 5-year deal for about $33 million. You know, so you're talking about six and a half, maybe seven a year for a top right tackle in this league. Do you want to pay that kind of money, or do you need to spend some of that money elsewhere? You know, I think a lot is going to hinge on, you know, what comes down the pike with Stephon Gilmore and obviously with Tyrod Taylor. Those are the two biggest financial decisions that have to be made, you know, as this team gets closer and closer to free agency. If one of those guys is off the table and not part of this roster next year, well, then maybe you can make an argument to invest that kind of money in a right tackle. You know, if Gilmore is not part of the equation, cornerback zooms to pretty high on the list for me in terms of addressing that position in the offseason. Fortunately for the Bills, it's a tremendously deep draft at cornerback and safety, two positions of need for this team. So my inclination is that they go into the draft to address those two positions. But we have to also remember, guys, they've only got six picks.
Right, right.
So that's not a lot to work with. And unless you're trading back and, you know, making more, you know, giving yourself a deeper pool of picks to use, you know, I think you really got to be judicious in balancing your assets and, you know, being fiscally responsible on the free agent side while also saying, you know, what can we realistically acquire in the draft? I think there's a lot of those decisions need to be made, and they need to be prioritized in proper order.
We're just about a month away from free agency, and you've got a post coming up tomorrow at BuffaloBills.com about potential free agent fits for the Bills.
Yeah, for the next few days, we're going to be kind of outlining some things. We're going to have potential free agent fits for the Bills. I pick a half dozen at what I felt were the top need positions. I'll give you the positions. I'm not going to give you the names, but I'll give you the positions. So for me, it was cornerback, not in any particular order here, but cornerback, safety, linebacker, wide receiver, offensive tackle, and quarterback. Regardless of what happens with Tyrod Taylor, yeah, you've got to add a quarterback to this roster because E.J. Manuel is a free agent. I think the general consensus is he's not going to be back. So now what you're left with is Cardell Jones and potentially Tyrod Taylor. That's only two. I think you got to bring another one in. So that's a position that I feel has to be addressed. Will it be free agency? It's a thin free agent crop. I don't think there's any question about that. So we'll have to see. Wide receiver, just by virtue of the fact that you got four free agents at the wide receiver position on your roster right now, all of them certainly aren't coming back. Robert Woods might be priced out of what you're willing to pay at the position because he's probably looking at about $9 million a year if there's any interest. I don't know if they want to invest that kind of money. So maybe they're looking there. Offensive tackle, we just kind of covered a little bit. There's some attractive guys that are expected to be on the market that are probably not going to be re-signed by their current clubs. And then linebacker, you need a weak side linebacker for this new defense. You don't have one right now. Zach Brown would be a nice fit, but he's probably going to make some big money on the free agent market after the season that he had. And do you want to invest? What's the value there now? So I think there's a lot of decisions to be made. I think cornerback's a position they have to address, whether Gilmore's here or not, too, because Corey White's a free agent. You're pretty thin after Ronald Darby and Kevon Seymour. So you've got to bring in some youth as depth there. And, you know, it's a deep position. And safety is another one. You got a couple of free agent safeties on this roster. Aaron Williams' future is undetermined. So, and Corey Graham's in the last year of his contract. So that's another position you've got to tackle as well.
I think this is why I asked you about, you know, veterans getting clipped or reworking deals. Like, you have to create more space. You have to create more money for this team.
But again, the Bills have 23 unrestricted free agents. A lot of guys have come off the books already. Mm-hmm. You know, do you really need to subtract more? You know, I think it's a question worth pondering here. Your space may be created by who is not brought back, maybe more than anything else, because obviously Stephon Gilmore is potentially the biggest hit to your cap if he's kept here in some way, shape, or form, whether it's long-term contract or franchise tag. And quite frankly, I just don't see them using the franchise tag on him. I suppose it's a possibility, but it's a projected $14.3 million for the cornerbacks. It's not set in stone yet, but those are the projections that the league handed out to the NFLPA at the Super Bowl a couple weeks ago. So that's a fat number, and I don't see it being a number that the Bills want to entertain, especially when you consider the fact, guys, that this defensive scheme is going to be based on a lot of zone concepts coverage-wise. They're not going to be playing man-to-man as much as they were the last few years under Rex Ryan. So is it worth paying Stephon Gilmore, who's a press man corner, $14 million in a defensive scheme where he's not going to be doing that all that often? I don't know if you can justify that kind of spending, even if you think he's worth that money.
This is on the website tomorrow in a couple of days?
Yeah, so we'll have six potential free agent fits tomorrow. Then we'll kind of take an advanced look at setting the market and what players are probably most likely to receive franchise tag designations, because that opens on Wednesday. So we kind of hit that a day before the tag market opens on Wednesday and runs through March 1st. And then after that, we're going to take a look kind of around the rest of the division. What are the Jets thinking about right now in terms of the decisions they have to make personnel-wise? Patriots, Dolphins, we're kind of going to cover the rest of the division so Bills fans kind of get a feel for what the competition's looking at, too.
Look for that tomorrow on the website. Chris, always a pleasure. Great to reconnect.
You got it. Good to be back.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider from BuffaloBills.com in studio.